So kindly inviting me to be amongst all of you today in the holy Sri Radha Rasbihari Temple. Today, all over India, there is celebration of Independence Day, August 15th. On this occasion, we would like to speak on the subject of a particular personality who, by the mercy of Krishna, achieved the ultimate independence, Putana. On the day of Janmashtami, Krishna appeared at midnight in the house of Nanda and Yashoda in Gokul Mahavan. The next morning, Nandotsav, a grand celebration, was enacted, wherein they performed the Abhishekam for baby Krishna. And all the residents of Vrindavan were overwhelmed with the sweetest and highest transcendental happiness, seeing the beautiful form of Gopal. It wasn't like he was the son of Nanda and Yashoda only, because this infant child manifested his potency to attract the hearts of every single gopa and gopi of the elder generation to love him as their own child. Maharaj Parikshit, in one place in 10th canto, he extols the wonder of this phenomenon. Shukadeva Goswami, you tell us that all the mothers and fathers of Vrindavan, they love Krishna more than their own children. This concept is beyond human comprehension. It violates the very principle of human nature. No matter how qualified or beautiful one may be, no one has the power to love them more than their own child. But yet, all the gopis and gopas, they love Krishna not only more than their own children, but as their own child. That is Krishna's power. For every living being, Krishna could manifest himself in such a way that he is only for that person. So you can imagine how wonderful a festival Nandotsav was. Everyone was dancing and singing and offering the best of everything they had to make it auspicious for the welfare of the future of Gopal. So after the birth ceremony of Lord Krishna, Nanda Maharaj was required to travel with some of the senior gopas to Mathura to pay his taxes to Kamsa, who was the ruling king of the area. While he was there, he took the opportunity to meet with his very intimate friend, Vasudev. Vasudev, after exchanging very loving pleasantries with Nanda Maharaj, he urged Nanda, go back soon to Gokul, because great dangers may fall upon the inhabitants there, and especially your child, Krishna. Nanda Maharaj did not understand why Vasudev was speaking this way, but in time it would be revealed. Because as Nanda Maharaj was traveling between Mathura and Vrindavan, Kamsa, after having a meeting with his demoniac ministers, called for a Kechari witch, Rakshasi, of the name Putana. She was as cruel as anyone could possibly be. Today, we have our terrorists who think nothing of killing the innocent for what they believe is a higher cause. Putana was a terrorist, bigger and better than any insignificant terrorist in today's world, because she had powers, and the hatred of her heart was inconceivable. She was especially commissioned by Kamsa to kill baby children, and she did, by the thousands, and she did it with lust. She had such a passion in her heart that when she would murder innocent babies and oftentimes drink their blood and eat their flesh, cities, villages, pasture grounds, wherever there was babies, she was ruthlessly murdering them. And she knew the art and the science of how to do so. And just like a good terrorist of today, the best way to terrorize is to get into a place without anybody knowing who you are or what is your intention. In fact, the more people trust you, the more they will give you facility, and the more facility they have due to that trust, the more you could create havoc. This was her psychology. So when Putana came to Vrindavan, she didn't come as a Rakshasi, as a world-famous murderer of children, terrorist. She disguised herself to be as beautiful as a goddess of fortune. She assumed a human-like form that was so enchanting, and she was generating a particular energy that was so sweet and so motherly that everyone trusted her. She came right in to Gokul, and people were standing back. Oh, how beautiful. Just see the beauty of her face, her lovely lotus-like eyes, her beautiful shapely form. We think that she must be an expansion of the goddess of fortune who holds the lotus flower, who has come to Gokul just to bless our newly born Gopal. They were giving her honor and respect and deep affection from their hearts. Her diabolical plan appeared to be successfully unfolding. She went right into the maternity home of Nanda Maharaj, where Yashoda Mai, Rohini Devi, and the other ladies were cuddling the newborn Krishna. She walked right in. Not only did nobody even considered stopping her. In fact, they were grateful to her. Such a blessing. How auspicious. And by the power of her yogic siddhi, she picked up Krishna, placed him on her lap. And everyone was feeling very happy. When she first looked at Krishna, something in her heart told her, this little baby, newborn, is all powerful. He can destroy the entire universal creation. She had that inclination within her heart to understand he was the Supreme Lord of all lords. But isn't that the way Maya tricks us, even as devotees? We know it. We know Krishna is the Lord. We know he's watching us. We know he's all powerful. And we know for sure what we're supposed to be doing. But still, due to our conditionings, the mind focuses on its egoistic or sensual aspirations. And due to the mind, the intelligence becomes corrupted, and we act abominably. Yes? Have any of you ever had this experience? You know what's right. You know what Krishna wants. But still, the mind covers that intelligence and impels us to act contradictory to what we know is right. Putana understood Krishna by Krishna's grace. But because of her demoniac mentality, she still was convinced that she would kill him. And when Krishna saw Putana, like an innocent newborn baby, he closed his eyes. The acharyas explain why he closed his eyes. Various reasons. So many reasons we'll never know. But a few of them have been revealed. One is that she was coming in the mood of being his mother, in the sense that she was about to give him the milk from her breast. And she was a woman. And Krishna was just born in this world. And the first demon in the history of this incarnation that he was to kill was to be a woman. According to the Shastra, women, the old, and the Brahmins should not be killed. And Krishna made that law. And he was going to have to break his own law at the onset. as it is said, first impressions are lasting impressions. This was going to be the first demon Krishna was going to kill in a whole line of them, a woman who was approaching as a mother. There are seven mothers. One who nurses or gives the milk of breast is a mother. It is explained that although Putana was so beautiful and enchanted the hearts of all the Vrijavasis, she was like a vicious, sharpened sword in a beautiful, ornamented casing. She came to kill. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains that this is very significant. That Krishna was hardly a few days old. And for those of you who are grihasthas, you know what a child is like when they're just 1 or 2 days old. Very small and completely helpless. But still, Putana was seeing this little tiny child as having the capacity to destroy the whole universe. How is this? Srila Prabhupada explains, God is always God. God never becomes God. Sometimes Mayavadi philosophers, they teach that actually everything is Brahman. You are God, I am God, everything is God. But due to the influence of Maya, somehow or other, by your own lila, you have forgotten that you are God. And therefore you are appearing to be separated from God. But that is an illusion. But through proper discrimination, proper moral conduct, and proper spiritual practice, you can come out of that cloud of illusion and realize that you are God. In other words, you become God. But herein we find that Krishna, he didn't have to study scriptures. He didn't have to do any meditation or tapasya. From his very infancy, he was God. God is always God. And God, by his inconceivable potency and by his independent free will, he can manifest his full potencies and all of his opulences in any form he likes. Krishna was a tiny little baby. But even in that form of the tiny little baby, he had all the powers and opulences as him in his full-fledged youthful form. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that little baby form, he had unlimited supreme strength, knowledge, wealth, beauty, fame, and renunciation. All the six opulences in full are manifested in Krishna in whatever form he takes. So this transcendental little baby Krishna closed his eyes. Putana took him on lap. And then she did the most horrible deed. She pushed her breast into Krishna's mouth. Her breast had already been saturated with a deadly poison. A poison that could kill many, many grown men instantly. It wasn't slow acting. It was immediate action. Venomum. The Vrijavasis, as she was putting this most deadly poisonous weapon in their beloved's mouth, they were ecstatic, thinking how auspicious. This is terrorism. And Krishna, he just grabbed that breast and started sucking with great enthusiasm. He knew exactly everything. What he did first is with his little tiny hands, those tiny little fingers of a baby child that are so helpless, like little petals of a lotus flower. He just squeezed Bhutana, squeezed her breast, and it caused her unlimited pain. And then he sucked. He sucked so hard. And he sucked out the poison. And somehow or other, Bhutana had a moment of motherly affection for Krishna also. And he sucked out milk. But that was only the beginning. He carried on to suck out her very life force. As he was sucking her life force out, she was in terrible pain. And meanwhile, Krishna, with his legs, was kicking her, just like little babies kick their legs. With his hands, he was squeezing her, and with his mouth, he was sucking her. She was crying out in a loud, hideous voice, "Child, leave me! Child, leave me! Child, leave me!" Now, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, they have revealed that Bhutana represents the anartha of the pseudo or false guru, a great obstacle on the path of pure devotional service. Like Bhutana, who disguised herself to be like a mother and promised to nourish the child with milk that would give them nutrition, health, and growth, but actual poison was mixed in that milk. Similarly, the false guru may appear in the guise of a very holy man or a very holy woman. They may even quote authorized scriptures just to appear. Yes, this is Guru. And give that milk of knowledge. But when such a person gives their own interpretations, it's like poison. Mayavad interpretations. Interpretations of approaching God for sense gratification, for impersonal liberation. Our acharyas explain it is like poisoning the real true process of bhakti. And Krishna, who, for a person who just hears about Krishna consciousness, Krishna is like a little helpless baby within our heart. Yes? We're just developing our devotion to Krishna. When we hear for such persons, we're actually allowing them to poison that little baby of Krishna, our inclination for Krishna consciousness within our heart. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that one should not listen to the Mayavad philosophy. Why? Even if one is a very elevated person, by hearing that understanding that I am God, that I am the Supreme, that everything is an illusion except the one Brahman, then our propensity for real loving service is poisoned. So yes, those who are teaching approach God for a better materialistic life, for nicer sense gratification, for some liberation. They are poisoning the inclination for pure, unalloyed devotional service. In other words, they're poisoning Krishna within our heart. So one should not be enchanted by the forms and the words. One should understand that they are actually nourishing us with the real thing. And another type of pseudo-guru is the guru within our own hearts, our own empirical inclinations to interpret things according to mundane considerations. That is like Putana within us, who's trying to poison. The spiritual master, the guru, sadhu, shastra, they are teaching us what Krishna consciousness is, but our own minds, our own corrupted intelligence are trying to interpret it in various ways, creating doubt, creating deviation. Like terrorists, we cannot trust. Therefore, evam parampara praptam, the safest way is to receive the milk of knowledge from the mother of the Vedas through parampara, through proper disciplic succession. So Krishna was sucking, he already sucked all her milk, now he was sucking her life, and she was screaming, child, leave me. She was in terrible pain. And with all of her powers, and she had tremendous potencies, she was trying to somehow get Krishna off of her breast. But Krishna squeezed and held on and sucked, and there was nothing she could do. She was suffering miserably. She screamed so loud that she deafened everyone in the entire village. Her voice alone seemed to shake the trees and the clouds. It seemed like it was creating an earthquake. How many of you can yell like that? She became so desperate. She got up. She ran outside the house of Nanda Maharaj. Then ran outside the village of Vrindavan, or Gokul. And went into a pasture ground. There, she was so beside herself, in a suffering condition, she could no longer contain her disguise. She manifested her original Rakshasi form. In front of everyone, she grew into huge proportions. And Krishna was just like a little speck. She was approximately 12 miles high. Hare Krishna. How high does a jet airplane fly? 10 miles? At its peak, she was that big. So how big was Krishna in proportion? He didn't grow. He didn't have to grow. She grew like anything to try to fight against Krishna. But Krishna remained the same little size. He was like a little speck on her body. But still, he was all powerful. She couldn't remove him. He kept squeezing, kicking, and sucking until he sucked her very life from her body. And she fell to the ground. And for an area of about 12 miles, all the trees were just crushed, destroyed. And she laid there. Krishna was playing on top of her breast very happily, crawling. Because as we know, Krishna had not yet learned how to walk or talk. He was a baby. The gopis, they ran and they somehow or other picked up Krishna and brought him back. He began to perform various auspicious rituals to protect him. Srila Prabhupada explains that they took various ingredients from the cow. They took the tail of cow, and they were swishing him and hitting him with the tail of a cow in different parts of his body for protection, chanting mantras of the names of Lord Vishnu. And they were placing little tilaks made out of cow dung. They bathed him in cow urine. Srila Prabhupada explains that this is why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita teaches the importance of protecting cow. Everything about the cow is so auspicious and so important for human civilization that here we find the most developed personalities of the highest consciousness . They are protecting that which is most loved to their heart with the auspicious gifts given by our mother cow. I remember some years ago, a very powerfully influential sannyasi came to a farm community I was living. And he got stung by a wasp.
Hare Krishna.
On the same day, a little child of one grihastha godbrother of mine got stung by a similar wasp. And both of them started to form infections. So the sannyasi, he said, I need to do something about this. They both came to me together. And I said, well, here, we just use cow dung for these things. It works really nice. And I got some cow dung for them. I said, cover up with cow dung. We'll be all right. Sannyasi said, what? On an open wound? Cow dung? Who do you think I am? This is primitive. So he rode. He sent one of his servants to travel round trip, almost an hour, to get to a pharmacy to get some antiseptic, disinfectant medicine. And he put it all over his wasp sting. And the grihastha, he didn't have any servants to go to town to get medicine. So he just had faith and just put the cow dung on. The next morning, would you like to know the outcome? You probably already know. The next morning, the little boy, there was no trace that he was ever stung by a wasp. It was absolutely gone. And the sannyasi, his whole arm was about 1.5 times the size. It was so swollen and red and pounding with pain. Hare Krishna. So I, upon seeing this, I developed great faith in Prabhupada's words, where Prabhupada says that the dung of a cow and the urine of a cow is actually antiseptic. Krishna has made it that way. So in so many ways, they were chanting mantras and bathing Krishna and giving him the blessings of Mother Cow for his protection. But even with all these medicinal and auspicious rituals, they were not satisfied that Krishna was really safe after this horrid experience, until they gave him, according to the gopis, the ultimate test. Because when a child is really in a safe and protected situation, the child is very enthusiastic to drink the milk from his mother. So Yashoda Mai took Lord little baby Gopal on her lap, and Krishna just blissfully sucked her milk with very good enthusiasm. And then they understood that the Lord Vishnu has protected our little Gopal. Meanwhile, Nanda Maharaj is coming home from Mathura. And what does he see? Along with his associates, in the pasture ground, there was this gigantic monster just laying there. Shukadev Goswami explains what she looked like. She was monstrous. Her eyes looked like gigantic, sunken, dark wells. Her nostrils were like mountain caves. Her hair was like a forest of scattered red bushes. Her breasts were like hills. Her teeth were like plowed roads. Her arms and her fingers were like very formidably constructed bridges. Her thighs were like the banks, two banks of a river. Her belly was like a dry lake. Putana ki jai. Nanda Maharaj was, really, what happened? Who is this? And then when he found out that this monstrous Rakshasi tried to kill Krishna, he was beside himself, worrying. But then, thinking that she was like a huge snake, they decided to avoid all chances that she may come back to life. Srila Prabhupada explains like this, that in the villages, when a venomous snake is killed, they understand that just by the air and the oxygen, it often brings the snake back to life. So they slice up the snake in small pieces and then throw those pieces in a blazing fire. Then there's no chance that the snake could come back to life. So the gopas, they cut off Putana's huge body into small pieces and made a blazing fire and threw all those pieces in the fire. And something extraordinary happened then. The fragrance of that smoke was none different than a guru, which Srila Prabhupada calls the most saintly mixture of aromatic herbs. It was intoxicated with sweetness. How is that possible? In order to understand this, we must comprehend the science of Krishna consciousness. That when we associate with Krishna, we become Krishnaized. Krishna is all pure. When we associate with Krishna, whatever our condition may be, we become purified. Krishna is all sweet. However bitter and demoniac we may be, if we associate with Krishna, we become sweetened by Krishna's love. So although Putana was an ugly monster of a Rakshasi who had murdered, she had murdered far more than any terrorist organization in today's world. She was murdering thousands and thousands and thousands of babies. Prabhupada says she even murdered babies in Vrindavan. What to speak of all over the world? And she could fly. She could just uproot a tree branch and fly on it anywhere she wanted at tremendous speed. In other words, she didn't have to get through any airport security to get to her destination. She was the topmost terrorist. So wicked, cruel. But because she made that contact with Krishna, she became completely purified. In fact, Krishna was so merciful to her that he saw the good in her intention, even though she was not even consciously understanding what it was. She came with the nefarious conviction that she would murder Gopal. But somehow or other, she did take the role of his nurse. And even though the whole motive was the poison, she did somehow give Krishna some of her milk. So Krishna purified her of all the bad and accepted the good. Because she was so wicked and cruel, Krishna made her suffer. Oh, how she suffered. When Krishna was squeezing her breast and kicking and sucking, perhaps she suffered qualitatively what an ordinary living being may have to suffer through terrible miseries for many, many hundreds and thousands of births. But Krishna just concentrated it all. She suffered everything. But when all that, all of her sins, all of her karmas, everything else, Krishna just erased it through that flash of suffering. And all that was left was the good, her motherly affection. We should understand a devotee. Sometimes a devotee engages in nice devotional service. But then due to previous conditionings, he or she may fall down into abominable activities. But Krishna tells in Gita, Neha Bikramanastosti, that any endeavor on the path of bhakti is never lost. It is eternal, because bhakti itself is eternal. In any offense or sinful activity a person performs, it's material. It's temporary. It must have the offense is mundane, and therefore the reaction has a beginning and an end. So if a person commits terrible offenses, or a devotee, and even engages in abominable sinful activities, that devotee is going to have to suffer the reactions. And Krishna may arrange that that devotee suffers the reactions more intensely than an ordinary materialistic person, because for one who knows, much is expected. But factually, whatever service that devotee has rendered to Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas is eternal. That's always there waiting. And when all the offenses are erased, all that's left is our love for Krishna. I often cite when one devotee fell into abominable sinful activities. Prabhupada knew it. But that devotee helped Prabhupada in the early days. And Srila Prabhupada wrote him a letter. He said, because you once chanted Krishna's name sincerely, and even in Vrindavan, Krishna will save you. Krishna will save you. And this devotee had all kinds of, he couldn't give up his sins. He had all anxieties, then got cancer, and suffered intensely, horrible. But through it all, turned to Krishna and surrendered. And in the end, all that was left was his love for Srila Prabhupada. Everything else was just wiped away. Through suffering, through reaction. But what was left? Just that sentiment of love for Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. That is Krishna's mercy. And that is a lesson of Putana. Yes, somehow or other, she came to serve Krishna. She came to give Krishna her milk, to hold Krishna in her lap. She embraced Krishna with an affectionate embrace. And after Krishna just eliminated all of her demoniac tendencies, all he remembered, she came as my mother. Krishna sees the good in everyone. Krishna sees the essence within everyone. And on this day of independence, I'm very happy to tell you that Putana gained ultimate independence. India didn't. We got independent, but then after that, three wars with the same nation that was divided, and so many other problems, which is a whole history in and of itself. But Putana, she went to the spiritual world. She gained the relationship of a mother to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains, she became a nurse who assists Mother Yashoda in Goloka Vrindavan for the rest of eternity. Who loves Krishna as a mother. Supreme liberation. How is that possible? Uddhav, he was with Vidura after Krishna disappeared from this world. And in the presence of Vidura, Uddhava was remembering Krishna in such deep pangs of separation. Because in the Yadu dynasty, Uddhava was the most dear, closest friend of Krishna. They would eat together. They would sometimes lay in the same bed together and rest after prasad. They would walk together, talk together, joke together. They would perform activities for the welfare of the state together. Uddhava was such a dear, intimate friend of Krishna that sometimes he would even consult Uddhava to get good advice from him. And usually Krishna listened to whatever Uddhava said. Such a relationship of love and friendship and such intimacy. But we know how Krishna sent Uddhava from Mathura to Vrindavan to give his message to the gopis and to Srimati Radharani. And there Uddhava understood the supreme glory of Vipralamba Seva, the service and separation of gopis. When he saw their total absorption in Krishna, their body, mind, words, life were utterly surrendered to Krishna at every moment. They knew nothing but Krishna. Uddhava was thinking, I'm with Krishna day and night. They're far away from Krishna. But the love of their hearts in separation is so great that I feel that I have not even a speck of that love. He felt totally insignificant. He considered every one of the gopis to be his gurus. And he prayed to be a gumalata, a piece of grass, or a little shrub on the ground of Braj, praying and hoping that someday, perhaps, the gopis would trample on his head and he would attain the dust from their lotus feet. He considered that a higher position than being Krishna's best friend in Dwarka, to be an insignificant shrub in Vrindavan, being stepped upon by the gopis. So Uddhava understood love and separation by the mercy of Krishna and the Braja gopis. And now here Krishna had disappeared from the world, and he was also experiencing this love and separation. And in his talks with Vidura, a jewel of a verse just sprung from the core of his heart through his mouth. Aho bakiyam stana kalakutam. Who else can I take shelter of but Krishna? Who else is so merciful? Putana came as a rakshashi to murder him, and she had already murdered tens and thousands of others. But right, Krishna saw whatever trace of good was in her heart and gave her the supreme liberation of being his own mother in the spiritual world for all eternity. Who else can I take shelter of than Krishna? Who else is so causelessly merciful? Where else is our hope? When Mukunda Dutt told Gadadhar Pandit that a great Vaishnava has come to Navadvipa, and I know you like to be with great Vaishnavas, so come and I will show you. He took him to the house of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Mukunda Dutt knew Pundarik Vidyanidhi because they were from the same hometown in Chattogram, in what is now Bangladesh. But when Gadadhar Pandit saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was very confused, because Gadadhar Pandit was a simple brahmachari who was absorbed in Krishna from his birth, always renounced and humble. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi had opulences all around him. He had magnificent curling locks of hair that was meticulously combed and saturated with very costly scented oils. And his clothes were silk with wonderful jeweled ornaments. And all around him was just facilities for sense gratification. Soft seat, silken pillows, chewing spices, mirrors. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was looking in the mirrors at himself and smiling. Gadadhar Pandit wondered, why has Mukunda Dutt brought me here? This person appears very materialistic. But Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach the world that you cannot always understand by external appearances what is in the heart. It's easy to judge according to what we see. But Vaishnavas can sometimes be quite inconceivable. Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigyena bujai. We do not always understand the heart of a real devotee. So Mukunda Dutt wanted to reveal the heart of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And he chanted this verse. Aho baki yama stana kula kutam. That Uddhava is crying out, who else can I take shelter of than Krishna? And he's crying this out in total separation, feeling himself so humble and fallen. Who else can I call out for? Who else can save me but Krishna?
who is so causelessly merciful, he gave supreme liberation to the Rakshashi Putana. And when Pundarik Vidyaniti heard about Krishna's love for every living being and his mercy, because he was so humble, and a devotee naturally feels him or herself to be the most fallen. If you don't feel yourself very fallen, this particular verse is not very relevant to our lives.
Yes?
If we think, I am a Mahant, then who cares about what Krishna did to Putana? Huh? We're more concerned with how Krishna dealt with Balaram or something like that. But when we feel ourselves very fallen, then we need an example of how Krishna can deliver the most fallen. So because Uddhava was a very, very elevated devotee, he was also extremely humble, considering himself most fallen. And who is Pundarik Vidyanidhi? He is the incarnation of Vrishabhanu, the eternal father of Srimati Radharani in the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya would cry out in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Pundarik, my father, Pundarik, my father. Lord Chaitanya told all the devotees that soon there will be a great Vaishnav like no other Vaishnav that will come to Navadvip. Pundarik, Pundarik. So when Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard this beautiful verse glorifying Krishna as the killer of Putana and the liberator as well, he went into ecstasy. Tears poured from his eyes. He started ripping apart his clothes. His hair went in all scattered directions. Almost everything in the room just was scattered on the floor. And it took over 10 men to try to hold him down. He was in convulsions of ecstasy, and they couldn't do it. And the whole time he was just crying out this verse, Oh Krishna, I am so fallen. I am so sinful. I am so useless. Why can't I remember you? Yes. Krishna's liberating of Putana gives ultimate hope to the hearts of all devotees. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, as Krishna's representative, has come into our lives to give us the opportunity to be free from all of our rakshasa materialistic tendencies. And Srila Prabhupada engages us in the service of Krishna, as unqualified as we are. For Srila Prabhupada knew the power of devotional service. The power of how even a drop of devotional service can save one from the most horrible consequences. Srila Prabhupada had us distributing his books by the millions to people who knew nothing about Krishna, but somehow or other, because they touched the book, because they give some donation for the book, they may even read the book and get just by that even momentary connection to Krishna, they've rendered service, like Putana rendered some service. And in due course of time, there is no question, it is for certain, that anyone who renders devotional service will be saved. And for all of us, what is our qualification? Somehow or other, through the association of devotees that Srila Prabhupada has trained, we had some opportunity. Maybe it was a jnata sukriti, somehow some little service, some little appreciation. Putana, even though she hated Krishna and wanted to kill Krishna, somewhere in her heart, that momentary flash of appreciation for Krishna came in. He's the Supreme Lord. Some motherly affection was there, awakened by Krishna. Similarly, when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, people didn't know what is Krishna. People were addicted to drugs, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling their lives away. But Prabhupada somehow or other got them to make that contact with Krishna, either through prasad, or through some book, or through just appreciating a devotee. And ultimately Krishna will always see that. Once we begin by just rendering any type of little service, however nonsense we may be, Krishna will never forget that. Everything else is going to come and go that you do, but Krishna will always remember that little service, and he'll keep giving you opportunities to progress. That is Krishna's mercy. So yes, the story of Putana gives all of us great hope that even a little bit of service, even done with the wrong mentality, is more precious than anything else you can attain in your life in this relative world. What to speak of sincerely rendering service for the pleasure of Krishna? If Putana attained the state of Krishna's mother in the spiritual world with her mentality, Shukadeva Goswami says, what to speak of the gopis who love Krishna with their hearts and souls, whose only motivation in life was to please him? How valuable, how glorious, how infinitely precious is the path of devotional service Srila Prabhupada has given us. And if we have a humble state of mind, we will be able to really appreciate it. Shukadeva Goswami ends this beautiful story by giving a benediction that anyone who sincerely hears this narration of Krishna giving liberation to Putana will become very much attached to hearing and chanting the glories of Lord Krishna. That is the perfection of all of our desires. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananti koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.